Detour Death Holler brought us Season 3, Slash or Pass. It became the classic horror film podcast of its time. And now Death Holler brings us the most shocking season ever. Season 4, Dead or Dead.
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
Imagine, if you will, that one of the hosts is absolutely terrified of zombies.
So, what's the plan? Bash him in the head, that seems to work out.
Now, accept the fact there is no escaping this horror. Death Holler brings back the dead. Remember, when you're in Death Holler, listener discretion is advised. With hospitality like this, you'll never want to leave. We hope you stay alive.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk the earth.
Everyone, and welcome back to Death Holler. I'm your host, Reverend Dr. Death. Joining me as always is my co-host, La Urena. And this episode, we are discussing Planet Terror from 2007. Tagline, humanity's last hope rests on a high-power machine gun.
I mean, yeah. And especially if you can visually imagine what they're talking about, this is a real good one.
Yeah, and I mean, given the ending and how they might be the last humans and their protector rests on a high power machine gun, it's perfectly accurate to the movie.
You could say that she leans on it a little bit. Did you ever watch Beavis and Butthead back in the day?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You ever remember when they saw the, I don't know why this reminds me of it, but bikini girls with machine guns.
No, I don't remember that specific episode.
It's just a music video that was on one of the episodes, but it's literally exactly what it sounds like. Bikini girls with machine guns. It's a very good music video, and this reminds me of it.
Directed, written by, and music by Robert Rodriguez.
Man, the trifecta.
The man is talented.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, the music, I love the fucking music in this movie.
Yeah.
I love that kind of, it's like a Latin grindhouse beat or whatever that's going on. It kind of a rock bluesy type thing. It's really good.
Yeah, it's got very a little bit of why can't I think Desperado.
Yeah, it's got some of that going on.
Which is also what's it, not Robert Rodriguez, but why can't I think of the other actor right now? Or not other actor, other director, Quentin Tarantino.
It's got a little bit of his stuff in it.
And yeah.
I mean, he makes an appearance in this movie as a rapist, or a grapist, I should say, for YouTube's purposes. But I don't know how far that is off of reality. I don't want to make assumptions, but the man's got some weird stuff going on.
He hasn't had any accusations, really, has he?
He hasn't, no.
Okay, so.
But he was very good friends with Harvey Weinstein. Ooh. Because this movie lets you know at the beginning of it, brought to you by the Weinstein group or whatever.
Oh,
and
yeah.
you're like,
man, you know, if he has gone this far and has managed to escape any kind of accusations, he might be legit dude.
I feel like he's too nerdy to have done that. Mm-hmm. You know, like I can imagine him having fantasies about doing all kinds of weird stuff, but
like most normal guys.
Well, yeah, but it's extreme foot fetish being one of the weirdest ones that he's got.
It's a weird one, but there's weirder shit.
There's a lot weirder shit. There's like diaper guys and there's all kinds of weird shit. I'm just saying that, like, I could see him being the kind that, like, he might fantasize about, you know, all kinds of weird stuff, but he's nerdy enough that he wouldn't ever, you know, actually attempt it.
Yeah, exactly.
This was made, this particular part of the movie, because this is half of Grindhouse.
Yes.
Was made for $23 million. Death Proof was made for $33 million, and the movie overall, both halves, only made $50 million, so it lost money.
Holy fuck! No way!
It did. It lost money upon its initial release.
Color me fucking surprised. Is it like, please tell me it's a success afterwards.
I think it's a cult success, but the thing is that the reason that because they had plans to make all kinds of these. They wanted this to be a series of movies. That's why they had all those trailers, you know, the fake trailers for different, which most of those fake trailers have now become actual movies. The only one who hasn't is Rob Zombie's Werewolves of the SS, which would be great if he would make that. Sherry Moon Zombie dressed up as a, I mean, now you're talking about fetishes, but Sherry Moon Zombie dressed up as a in that latex Nazi outfit, like killing werewolves. I don't know. That might be a good movie.
Would
just
you say she was dressed as an SS whore making scary sounds?
Yes, exactly. That's what she was doing. And then I think Edgar Wright's movie Don't, which is just funny because every time they say something, it's just like, don't go in the house. Don't, you know, that's a, like a very British thing, you know, there's a British movie like that, but they made Thanksgiving finally. So that one came out eventually. So maybe they all will.
I don't remember that in the
Thanksgiving is on Death Proof's side of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Okay. That makes sense. Holy fuck. Okay. But like, is it the same? It's not the same creators though. It's just a coincidence.
No, it's the same creators that made every single, because Robert Rodriguez made the fake trailer for Machete, and they made that, or Machete, as he likes to call it. Eli Roth made Thanksgiving, and then he ended up making the movie later on. So, and then there was one more movie that came out of this one.
Okay.
But yeah, it lost money initially, because I don't think people understood what they were going for, and when they went in there, they were like, because most of the people were like, they didn't know what a Grindhouse movie was. And when they went in there and they saw this, they were like, what the? And there's even in the trivia, there was a lot of people in the first viewings of this movie that were leaving after Planet Terror, because when the fake trailers popped up for Death Proof, they thought the movie was over with. They didn't know there was another half of the movie that was still playing. So a lot of movie theaters had to actually put up signs saying, please stay for both movies. You know?
Yeah. Okay. Here's the thing. I didn't understand how a Grindhouse movie worked when I first saw this. And I still not only saw both of them, but I can say that at the time I enjoyed them. So
I want to say I enjoy one and a half parts of this movie. And I feel like Death Proof is great on the first half of that, when they're in like with the other girls, like from the 70s or whatever they're kind of hinting at. And then whenever it updates to the new ones, even though I like that scene where the one girl's riding on the front of it and, you know, and she has to get slung off and then they have to go fight. I don't like that group of girls. Like, and it's like the same movie repeats itself. I feel like Death Proof is half of a great movie, and then they should have just ended it after that. But
I mean, who doesn't love that car in Death Proof? I actually, at the time, had a brand new Mustang GT, black on black on black, and I really wanted to have a skull and crossbones on the top of that hood.
Oh, man, that'd be pretty badass. Well, who doesn't like the actor who's playing in
Kurt
Death
Russell.
Proof?
Hell yeah.
Kurt Russell's awesome, you know?
Oh, absolutely. So, anyways.
Principal players in this movie, however, is Rose McGowan playing Cherry Darling, who is
love
a go-go dancer.
Name.
She's not a stripper.
No.
And she's actually quite funny, or at least people tell her that she is.
Oh, okay.
It's sad because Rose McGowan, this had to have been the movie where she got graped by the Weinsteins, because I mean, she was at her peak in this movie, like, as far as her beauty. And she came out, she was the first one in the Me Too movement that came out against anybody. And there was a lot of, like, people who glommed onto that to try to just clout chase. But you can tell Rose was actually one of the ones that was affected. And she's always kind of, you know, held that standard. And I feel like this might have been the movie where it happened. Like, it just,
sad.
It seems like it would have fit, you know, in the scheme of things.
Dude, and she's been doxxed, it feels like, ever since.
Oh, yeah, they because she was coming out and calling out the clout chasers, she is, even in the Me Too movement, they cast her aside and said, you're no longer one of us, even though she was the one that probably, you know, was one of the actual ones that got affected the most by it. So,
damn.
She was in Scream from 1996. Of course, that whole scene where she's, you know, in the garage and being Rose up and, you know, Stu, because it is Stu that takes her out, you know, in the Scream outfit, kills her. She was obviously in Charmed. She played the replacement sister whenever they switched over. I can't, who was the third one in that before she came in? Because Holly and Alyssa Milanos was in the whole thing with her, but there was one more girl that swapped out, and then she, or it was Shannon, it was Shannon Doherty that left, and she replaced her.
Shannon Doherty, I think, got forced out.
Yeah.
And then,
which it's awful what happened to her, too. Didn't she just recently pass with breast cancer after years of fighting it?
Oh, my gosh.
Man, that's awful.
Yeah.
These poor women, like every one of the women in Charmed except for Alyssa Milano has been through the ringer. Yeah. Like, I mean, every single one of them. And I think that's because Alyssa Milano honestly made a deal with the devil, but that's a whole other topic. We should start up a podcast on conspiracy theories. And I mean, that I think they'd do pretty well. But anyways, Rose was also, she's in Death Proof. She has like a small scene in Death Proof. So they kind of intermingled characters. She was in Monkey Bone, which was a very strange Brendan Fraser movie back in the
day. I couldn't get into that.
No, it was, that's one movie by him that I did not like. I liked most of the movies he was in, including Encino Man, which Rose was also in, but not that one. She was in Jawbreaker, Phantoms. I hear that, Ben Affleck was the bomb in that movie, yo. and, Biodome. And Class of 1999, which is kind of a weird sci-fi futuristic movie.
Those are so weird because those are movies. These are movies and shows that are from my day. And I did watch a little bit of Charmed, but a majority of those movies I could not get into.
You didn't even like Encino Man. Everybody in our age group liked Encino Man.
I mean, I liked seeing him in his little fucking outfit.
Loincloth. Yeah.
But that's about it.
All right. It's funny that she was in two Pauly Shore movies, though.
Yeah, I don't remember that. It's funny because I did like the Pauly Shore movies. I think Son-in-Law was like one of the ones I would watch over and over for whatever reason.
In the Army Now is the one that I like best by him, just because he was less Pauly Shore in that of all the ones he was in.
Yeah.
Freddie Rodriguez plays Ray, the infamous El Ray, that killer that's been. He's basically like hinted at that he's some kind of like super badass, and like they just never really discuss it, which I kind of like. It's just kind of like every time they're like, "Are you El Rey?" and like they kind of leave the mystery behind it, and you kind of fill in the gaps. Apparently, he was in VHS 85, so when we get around to covering the VHS movies, we'll see Freddy again at some point.
Okay.
Josh Brolin plays Dr. William Block, who is a hypochondriac bastard in the movie. He likes to abuse his wife, apparently.
Yes.
He was in Deadpool 2, played Cable in that, did a great job. He was in the Marvel movies playing Thanos. He was in the Goonies back in the day. Played the older brother in that. No Country for Old Men, which there's actually some trivia about that connects to this movie specifically. Sin City, A Dame to Kill For. I love both the Sin City movies. I think Robert Rodriguez did a damn good job on both of those. And then Men in Black 3, he did a very good impersonation of Tommy Lee Jones as a younger man.
Oh, wow. Like,
I think he did a really good job in that. And then he was in Hollow Man, which there's always the joke that anytime a woman opens her mouth, Hollow Man's there to get a little action, if you understand what I'm saying.
Shut up when they yawn.
Marley Shelton plays Dr. Dakota Block, who's the fed-up wife, lesbian maybe, or bisexual at the very least. And she has her three friends, and they work pretty quick. So she's also in Death Proof in a crossover scene, playing the same character, which is interesting. Her and her father are from this movie are in a scene in Death Proof when they take the girls to the hospital, or and Kurt Russell's there, and they're talking about how he lived and the girls died and all that stuff. It's kind of a weird twist. It's almost like Death Proof happens before this movie does.
Yeah.
It does, because in this movie, one of the characters is listening to the radio, and they say that they're playing some song in memory of Jungle Jill, who is the girl in Death Proof that gets killed. So this movie does take place after Death Proof. So, or at least the first half of Death Proof, the good part. She was also in Never Been Kissed, Bubble Boy, which is a really, really fucking weird movie with Jake Gyllenhaal. I don't know how his career survived that, but it did. Rampage with The Rock, Sin City, the first one, Scream 4 and 5. We've covered her in those movies, and in Valentine, we covered her in as well. And she was in the Stephen King series 1923, so that's pretty cool. Jeff Fahey plays JT, who has the best damn barbecue in Texas, which is a bold statement, sir, but apparently it's true, or at least in his mind. He was from Dusk Till Dawn, the TV series, in Machete, the trailer. He plays like the scummy governor guy who's like setting Machete up.
That's hella funny.
He played in Wyatt Earp, which is funny considering the next actor in the movie. And then he played in Lawnmower Man. He played the title character in that movie.
I remember liking The Lawnmower Man.
It's interesting. The CGI definitely doesn't hold up now, but back in the day, it blew everybody's mind.
Oh, yeah.
He was in Body Parts, and then Psycho 3, which we covered. So he was in that, and then Silverado, which is a pretty good Western from the 80s.
Interesting.
Michael Behan plays Sheriff Haig, who wants that barbecue recipe. and it's funny because he was in Tombstone, which was the other Wyatt Earp movie that went against Wyatt Earp, so... he was also in Aliens. That's mostly known for that movie. The Terminator, The Rock, The Abyss. He's in the Thanksgiving trailer, the original one, not the new one that came out. He was in Cherry Falls, and then and a movie back in the 90s called Navy SEALs, which has a lot of actors from that time period, like early 90s.
God, he was in a lot of good movies, though.
Yeah, he was the bad thing about him, if he's not passed away, the last time I saw him at a convention, it was a few years back, he was deathly sick. Like, I don't know what was wrong with him. It was some kind of like cancer, I feel like, stomach cancer or something, but he was bad. Like, it was rough seeing him at that convention. Bruce Willis is in this playing Lieutenant Muldoon. He sees a lot of dead people, but Naveen Andrews plays Abby, who is a biological terrorist / capitalist who likes to collect men's balls, apparently. And he was in Lost for most of the episodes. That's what he was primarily in. Fergie,
yes,
plays Tammy in this movie, who is a girlfriend to Dakota. And when I say girlfriend, I mean in all senses of the word. And she's going to love you a long time. Let me just say something about Fergie. This was also at Fergie's peak as far as her looks. And it's not bad having her in the movie for what time she's in it. I'm just saying.
No.
Tom Savini plays Deputy Tolo, who's ripped apart in a scene very much like Day of the Dead, where Rhodes gets ripped apart, which is interesting. Michael Parks plays Earl McGraw, who's a badass retired cop. And also he is Marley's... Dakota's father in the movie, which is interesting when she opens up the door and he's got the axe and she's like, "Daddy?" And he's like, get your ass in here. And then of course we have Quentin Tarantino playing the Grapist, who has dick rot. Ugh. That scene, let me say something about the visual effects in this movie. That scene where his dick is falling off as he's walking toward Cherry, that's a little too good, if you ask me. Yeah. I think they should have backed off of the effects on that a little bit.
No, but it was fine. It was good. It's a good warning.
A synopsis. A group of soldiers addicted to a biological warfare agent let loose a container of the chemical onto an unsuspecting Texas town. Now, what's funny about this, before I get any farther into this, is this is actually the same setup initially, you know, soldiers being addicted to a chemical that will turn them into monsters if they don't keep getting it, as a Resident Evil animated movie.
Oh.
So there's a weird link there, just saying.
Which is funny because there's some really good Resident Evil animated movies, and you and I have not discussed at all.
And that one has Leon Kennedy in it. So, and it's, you know, so it's even better because it's got one of the best characters in it. I'm just saying. Soon the townsfolk are experiencing abscesses and rot and craving human flesh. And it's up to a ragtag group of survivors to fight off the zombies and super soldiers and hopefully find their way to safety. El Rey needs a gun. Cherry is a lot of fun when not crying. And JT just needs that last ingredient for the best damn barbecue sauce. You might feel a little prick is the other tagline from this movie.
Oh, my God.
And also Fully Loaded, but I don't feel like that's that great. No. You might feel a little prick's kind of funny. So, quotes. This movie is very quotable. I mean, I could have just kept leaving them in there, but I had to stop. Sheriff Haig, try not to shoot yourselves. Don't shoot each other, but especially don't shoot me.
Yeah.
Also, Sheriff Haig, finally, after the entire movie of telling people that El Rey cannot have a gun, give him the gun. Give him all the guns.
Yeah.
Tony Block, I'm going to eat your brains and I'm going to gain your knowledge. That when he's outside the car and he's like bashed in the window with a shovel or whatever. Skip, it's go, go, not cry, cry. El Rey, I never miss. Which is funny in that line because he says that right after he impregnates her.
Oh, God.
He never misses, even with his dick. JT Haig, that boy's got the devil in him. El Rey, that's my jacket. I looked for it for 2 weeks. He says that a lot in this movie. And then Sheriff Haig, now you've got a gal in your wrecked truck with a missing leg, a missing leg that's now missing. I love that line just because it's written so terribly, but for a reason, you know?
Yeah.
I could have believed that line was in Resident Evil 2002, but, you know, but in this movie it was intentionally bad.
Yeah.
All right, visually. These are some nasty motherfucking zombies in this movie. Let's get that up front and out of the way. Like the abscesses, especially when that one guy pops it and it lands right and then he like smears it all over Josh Brolin's face. Listen, that disturbs me to no end in that scene. Like, I don't like his character because he's a jerk, but nobody deserves that. That's some bad fucking juju right there.
It adds to the effect of the Grindhouse films, though.
It really does. Like, all the zombies look good in the movie. I love the, like, effect they did post, you know, processing where they added, like, scratch marks all over the movie. The scene where the film breaks, like, it starts burning and breaks or whatever, really well done. I thought the movie, when I was watching this in the theater and that scene happened, I thought that literally the projector broke. I didn't know it was part of the movie. I thought that the movie had literally broke.
I remember thinking that too, and I wonder how many people got pissed by that.
I was even kind of pissed when the movie came back because it clearly skips ahead, and it just leaves you to assume that you missed like some of the best parts of the movie.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait a minute, like roll that thing back. We just missed something, but no, that's how the movie's set up. The effects of the green gas when it's blowing, or whatever, they look pretty good. It's good color scheme. I can't fault. I mean, all the action scenes look good. Now, you can tell the green screen effects of them, the way that they filmed them. It's kind of got that Sin City kind of Uncanny Valley.
I love the way that looks, though.
I do, too. You can see it, but I like how it looks. I think it's a good effect. The scene where the helicopter is chopping up the zombies is really well done.
Fuck, man. So much gore in this film, and the good kind, too. Okay, do you have any trivia about how they made... I personally thought one of the best visuals was her fucking machine gun leg.
Yes, there is a scene. Okay. They basically wrapped her leg with like a green like tape or whatever so that they could CGI it out.
Okay, because, and also the way it's the actress too, the way she walks with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Fucking A, dude.
Now, if we're going to give this movie props for visuals, I mean, Rose McGowan. Mean, I would say Marley. I mean, she's kind of hot as the doctor in this movie. And then, of course, Fergie. Let's give them credit, you know.
Yeah, they did pick some hot bitches for the film, for sure.
And if you're one of those weirdos out there, I guess the babysitter twins might be hot, too. I didn't think they were, but, I mean, there's probably somebody out there that thinks that.
Yeah.
They were a couple of bitches, at least, though.
Yeah. Yeah, she was, man. She doesn't. It's funny because she's got good cleavage, but she doesn't have big knockers.
Who you talking about, Rose?
Rose McGowan, yeah.
Yeah, but they pushed them together like they needed to. Yeah, I mean, you
got to have something to push together. I always used to say that when people would be like, "You're," people try to say that I'm small. I'm not. And I'm like, you still got to have something. Even if I wore a push-up bra, you still got to have something to push up. So.
I even like just the set design in this movie, like JT's barbecue shack. Mm-hmm. I love how that looks. Like it's got that, you know, it's set on the hill. It's got that old 70s vibe to it. Like the set design in it, like the, it's run down. Like, I mean, you could tell he's not like, I mean, the health inspector's not paid him a visit in ages and he's just sitting there smoking and like, you know, mixing his own blood with the barbecue at one point in time. And he figures out that salt is the secret ingredient that he's been missing this entire time. There's just so much good set design in this movie.
God, speaking of that, there's a lot of really good posters for this film too. And they do have a JT poster.
JT is no kid my favorite character in the entire movie. I just love his dedication to that fucking barbecue. Like he's got the whole world like coming down around his shoulders, and all he's worried about is perfecting that fucking sauce, man. That's all he cares about. I kind of dig that when there's characters like that in the movie.
That's so funny. I just sent you the poster with him on Discord, but I love the posters that they made for this film.
Oh yeah, every one of them are good.
All the grindhouse looking posters.
Yeah, he's even got the little barbecue chunk down there in his hand or whatever. That's pretty good.
His barbecue place was called the Bone Shack.
Yeah, the Bone Shack.
Oh my God.
Because where El Rey impregnates Cherry Darling is on the waterbed that's shaped like a heart. And he even makes a comment to her. He's like, "This is JT's real Bone Shack, if you get what I'm saying."
Oh my God.
The story, I mean, we can't give it a lot of credit because it's basically taking all of the old, like, you know, zombie movies and like making patching them together. But I don't know. They just do it so well. Rodriguez does such a good job of like just making, you know, like the old standard fun, if you understand what I'm saying. Like he's got like the, you know, chemical agent that causes the zombie virus. He's got, I mean, just the basic setup of survivors trying to make their way out of town, but it's the writing around it, like the dialogue and the way that people interact that really sells the story in this one.
Yeah. No.
I mean, it's nothing fantastic. It's not like it's thespian level, but it's fun. And that's what you want in a movie like this.
And I think the actors did a really good job of bringing it to life.
Well, that goes in the acting. I think everybody, including Skip, the funniest thing about this movie is Skip is so bad, and there's a reason for that. He actually was a real estate agent who worked with Robert Rodriguez, and Robert was like, "I like the stories you tell all the time. I want you in my movie." So when you hear Skip, his lines are so deadpan, like there's no inflection in his voice, but it's perfect for this style of movie because grindhouse movies had terrible actors in them. The fact that he could not act was perfect for this movie.
Oh my God. Good for him, dude. I'm gonna not pretend that I'm jealous at all.
That whole scene where he's sitting there talking to Cherry and he's like, "And I'm gonna have to fire your ass, and I don't wanna have to fire your ass because I like looking at it." I love that fucking line he says to her. That is like so hilarious.
Oh my God.
But yeah, like JT's the standout as far as the acting in this movie, like him. Michael Biehn does a good job. You know, Cherry, El Rey, like all the majors. The only one who doesn't really, it's sad to say, is probably, I mean, it would be Tom Savini, like, because he doesn't really have a whole lot that he does in the movie, to be honest.
Yeah, I think he was just there to be there, though, which is fine.
He was.
And I totally get that.
I mean, not to say that Fergie's a great actress either, but mm-hmm. she's only in it for like a couple scenes, and she's just basically there to show her tits and ass anyway. So yeah,
she's there to look good. She was at the peak of her fucking fitness. I don't know if she's still really into that. I know she was when she was younger. But in fact, I wonder what, I haven't seen her as of recently, ever since her Star Spangled Banner fiasco.
Well, there was also that whole situation where her husband left her for a stripper or something. And I can't figure that out at all unless she just wasn't putting out in the bedroom. I mean, I don't know how you can have Fergie, especially the time he had her, and then decide and then go out to some random stripper and say, you know what? It's worth risking everything for this. Like, I don't, some guys just are, I don't know. You can't, there's no making them happy, I guess.
I believe he is a notorious cheater. I think she knew that. Not like knew. She had known about him before, but every woman thinks that you're the one that can change the guy.
Oh, and, yeah, you're going to be the one that's so good that he won't ever leave.
Yeah, and the thing about it is that, like I mentioned to you earlier, they divorced when their kid was like 2, maybe 3. And it's that weird time frame I was telling you about where women are in that weird, we get into this weird mode where we're like, we want to be the best mom ever. And she only has one kid. Second kid, you're like, fuck it. You know, like you've learned a thing or two because you've seen a thing or two. But yeah, the first 2 years, you're just trying to be like the best mom in the world. And I think
and she was maybe doing that thing that women sometimes do where they ignore their husband to be mom mode.
Yes, yeah. I am guilty of it, and it almost cost me my marriage. You know, it's just, it's one of those things, and it's funny because you do that, and you don't even look out for yourself. So while you're doing that, you're comfortable, you think you're comfortable in this marriage, you're in mommy mode, and especially it's bad, they got a boy. It's bad when you have a boy, because they are mama's boys to no end. And yeah, and there's definitely a little bit of competition, if you will, between a dad and a son in a, not in a obviously sexual way, but like in a weird, for the woman's attention, you know?
Yeah, the attention. Yeah, that's what I was thinking you was going for.
Yeah. So I think that's my non-expert opinion of what possibly could have gone wrong. Not to mention, I had known prior to them getting together that he was a notorious cheater. And I do believe people can change, but I also believe that there's a lot of guys that make it stand true that once a cheater, always a cheater.
People can change, but it's a lot harder than the media likes to make it out to be.
Yes.
You know, like movies and stuff like that. I mean, you know, that whole thing about Leopard really can't change its spots. I mean, it's not true. You can, but you have to really, really work at it, you know.
Fergie looks pretty good. She has aged. There's a picture I'm looking at right now. She's got some neck stuff going on from natural aging. She's got like gels, you know, kind of forming. Yeah. She's got wrinkles. She's got hooded, wrinkled eyes. But the woman is still gorgeous. So she's at the moment, she's aging naturally.
You know what she was doing before she got in the band that she was in though? Huh? The Black Eyed Peas.
Is there a stripper?
She was, but she was also smoking crack. So,
shit.
Yeah, for her not to have aged any worse, given what she used to do back in the day, I mean, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, right now, like I said, she just kind of looks like she's aging naturally. That's, I'm sure, subject to change. She'll probably fall into the Hollywood age reversal going on, which some of them are getting some good work done. I'm just flat out jealous.
Whoever did Lindsay Lohan's work, I mean, and Christina Aguilera, there's some devil work at play on those two. They look better than they probably did back even in their prime.
Fuck, it's insane. The only thing though I don't like about Lindsay Lohan's is that she's in another Christmas movie. I have not seen the movie, but my friend sent me a clip and was like, I wish my face would do this. And that thing she wishes her face would do is not move. And I am so not supportive of that. I was like, girl, like
Botox
first of all,
to the oblivion, basically.
Yeah, and it does not look good. Now the Botox looks good, like her face looks good, but she was trying to cry and she just looked like, you know, like I can't. She's like one of those Japanese masks, I forget what they're called, where like you're trying, I don't know. Oh my God.
Kabuki theater, yes, is that what you're talking about?
Yes. Yeah, it kind of looked like that, but she could not get her eyes to close and she could not get her mouth to form. And it was a joke somebody had posted, I'm sure, on TikTok. And my friend's like, I wish my face would not move like this. And I said, it was Kayla. And I was like, Kayla, that doesn't look good. I'm sorry, girl. Like, I don't support you on this journey. She even called her Botox person recently because she gets Botox for headaches, which is a different Botox than what you get for cosmetic. And she was mad that her face still moves.
That's so dumb.
I don't get it. Like, even if I were to get Botox, I kind of want to get rid of the 11s in the middle. I want my face to move. I want my emotion to show. So, Fergie, I don't know. Lindsay Lohan? Yeah.
Yeah. So all that to say that Fergie was letting those lovely lady lumps be right out there for you.
Stupid.
Listen, she was something back in the day.
And like those lovely lady lumps are fake. She did say that back in the day. She said
growing up, whenever the time I did, I did not give two shits that they looked were fake. Good. Let me tell you.
Whoever did them, because she got those done when she was young. Whoever did them did a fucking amazing job.
And the music, of course, in this movie is great. Yeah. It's again that do. You know, it's got that. It's good. I every time that it plays in the movie, I love it. And it's much better than the electronica music that Marilyn Manson did for Resident Evil. Sorry, but not sorry. But comparing it to that movie, and I know probably shouldn't, but we watched these together, or at least I did. I know you were kind of half remembering Resident Evil from a recent watch, but yes, not super recent. This movie is everything that Resident Evil is, but it's intentionally that way.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It works.
See, that's like a good comparison.
The bad cuts, the acting, you know, overacting, but then it turns around and it's just the visuals are so fucking good too on top of it. And they're not in Resident Evil. So I don't know. It's like I could make fun of Resident Evil in an MST 3K way and have fun that way. But this movie, I just legitimately love watching because it's entertaining.
We could never do this in MST 3K because I think we would become too like enthralled with the movie to remember that we're trying to like make fun or laugh about something.
Even the scene at the beginning of it where Abby's like trying to cuts that guy's balls off and he's going to put it in the container and then he drops the whole thing because it gets shot away by Bruce Willis's character, Muldoon, and all the balls are laying there and Abby's like face first in front of him and he like gets icked out by him and then like crawls away. Like those balls look fucking, I mean, they did a good job with the prosthetics.
They did. They really did. I don't like it.
Let's get into some trivia and then we'll talk. I'm pretty sure I pretty much gave my hand away on what I think about this movie, but we'll get to it in the review.
Yeah.
The appearance of Bruce, in a minor role is a subtle nod to the actual old marketing tricks they used in old grindhouse movies where they would contract a big name movie star to appear in the movie for one day and then do a bunch of like shots of them, you know, in the movie and then use that to advertise it basically.
Hell yeah. So, that's hella smart.
Skip Reisig, who plays strip club owner Skip, isn't an actor. He's actually Robert Rodriguez's real estate agent. Rodriguez thought he'd be perfect for the part of the brusque, no-nonsense, tough-talking strip club owner because, as Rodriguez says, that's just the way that Skip is when he's talking normally. So
that's kind of cool.
Yeah. Rodriguez specifically wrote the part of Dakota for Marley Shelton after working with her on Sin City, so that's cool.
That's awesome.
Although the ads and reviews for the film made it clear that it was a compilation of two films, like I said, a lot of people left the movie after Planet Terror finished thinking that that was all that the movie was.
That's,
and then they
had to
start putting up signs. So,
how long was the runtime of this film? Do we have, if not, I can look up.
I feel like each one was like 60 some minutes.
Okay, so it was
Death Proof ran a little bit longer, but this one was 60 and Death Proof was like maybe 90 or something. So it was like 2.5 hours or something like that.
Okay.
But you can get extended cuts of both movies, and they're like full-length movies at that point.
Jesus.
Because that's the way I watched this one.
Okay.
Let's see. Felix Sabatis, who plays Dr. Felix, you know, the one guy that's in there and he's, you know, talking about the pictures of the guys coming back from Iraq or whatever it was with the herpes on their dick that, and they would pee through all the different sores or whatever.
Yeah.
Is a real doctor, and he's Robert Rodriguez's personal physician. That's, and it's also his white 70s Challenger that was used in Death Proof.
Okay. Update here. I can understand why people left after this film. It was an hour and 45 minutes long. Just Planet Terror.
Okay, well, that's a long-ass movie
then. It is. Yeah. Death Proof was an hour and 27 minutes, which gives us a grand total of 3 hours and 11 minutes for both of them. So, anyways.
They just weren't willing to sit through another movie, I guess.
Yeah.
Joel Cohen and Ethan Cohen refused to give Josh Brolin the audition for the role of Llewellyn in their movie No Country for Old Men, which he got, but this is the reason why. So he asked Rodriguez to help him out, to help him shoot an audition tape while he was filming his segment in Planet Terror. Rodriguez shot and Quentin Tarantino directed the tape, which was shot using a $950,000 digital camera.
Damn.
And Marley Shelton, who was playing Brolin's character's wife in The Grindhouse, agreed to read the lines for Llewellyn's wife, Carla Jean, in, you know, No Country for Old Men, who was eventually played by Kelly MacDonald. So he basically got two of the hottest directors in Hollywood to make him an audition tape so he could get the Coen brothers to make him or put part of his movie.
Wow, that is insane. I wonder if it came with, like, letters of reference, too.
The funny thing is that we discussed earlier this season that Joel Cohen and Ethan Cohen actually worked on or were associated with Sam Raimi when he was making Evil Dead, and that's how they got their career. So it's funny that, you know, once they got, you know, the position they were at, we're like, you know what, Josh Brolin, you're not good enough to audition for us because we're kind of big stars now big deals, you know, when they had to have Sam Raimi basically vouch for them, you know, to get their own jobs.
Damn.
Rodriguez first came up with the idea for Planet Terror while making The Faculty in 98.
Oh, hell yeah.
He told Elijah Wood and Josh Hartnett that zombie movies were about to make a major comeback and that he wanted to be there first when it happened, and so he prepared a script. But he only got about 30 pages in before he got stuck for ideas, and when he got attached to other projects, the zombie craze happened, just as he said, because it literally happened in the early 2000s.
Damn.
And then Rodriguez later commented, "I knew I should have made that zombie movie."
Damn.
So that shows how smart of a director he is. He saw the trend. He saw that they were coming back, and, you know, he just got delayed on, you know, bringing his zombie movie out.
Yeah.
The machine gun leg effect was put off by putting a cast on Rose McGowan's leg to keep it stiff and wrapping green first aid tape around it. A gray wrap was sometimes used in certain lighting conditions.
Wow.
Michael Parks reprises his character as Sheriff Earl McGraw in Planet Terror. He also played the same exact character in Robert Rodriguez's From Dusk Till Dawn, as well as Quentin Tarantino's Kill Bill Volume 1 and Volume 2. So this is a multiple occurring character in a lot of their films. Sheriff Earl. While on set, Rodriguez would play the soundtracks from Escape from New York and The Thing to set the mood for the movie. And Kurt Russell stars in both films, and of course he was on Death Proof. So,
oh my God,
it's funny that they wanted music to kind of sound like Carpenter in Resident Evil, but then Rodriguez would actually play Carpenter's own music in the background while he was filming this movie. There's a lot of connections between these movies. Yeah. It's kind of weird. The scene where Dakota jumps out of the window and lands on top of the trash cans was filmed twice. The first shot had a stunt double falling onto a crash mat from the original height, and the second had her falling onto the trash cans from scaffolding at a lower height. A car driving by was put in to disguise the switch.
Okay.
Carpenter, who composes the scores to his own films, was originally chosen to compose the score to this one, but Rodriguez ended up taking over the job as composer instead. So,
how the fuck do you get from having John Carpenter slated to do it to be like, I'm just going to do it myself? I mean, I'm not saying he did a bad job. He didn't. But, like, John Carpenter.
But he, according to this, he did use slices of Carpenter's Escape from New York score throughout this movie.
Okay.
Like little snippets of it. Deputy Tolo is a terrible shot. That's Tom Savini's character. He keeps missing his targets throughout the movie. In Portuguese, Tolo means fool. So that's okay. Kind of where... a box of Great White Bites cereal can be seen in Dr. Block's kitchen. This fictional cereal can also be seen in Rodriguez's kids' film Shorts from 2009. So,
okay.
A little inner movie, you know, mumbo jumbo that he's got there. When Ray is first introduced, he asks the owner of the Bone Shack for a pack of cigarettes. That's when JT hands him the Red Apple brand. That's the same brand that Bruce Willis's character, Butch Coolidge, is handed by Marcellus Wallace in Pulp Fiction.
Oh, that's badass.
So there you go. The main character's name is El Rey. In Robert Rodriguez's earlier movie, From Dusk Till Dawn, Seth Gecko is trying to get to a place called El Rey.
Huh, interesting.
And Rodriguez named his channel, which I don't even know if it's still a thing or not, but he had like a cable channel there for a while called El Rey. So he very much likes that name for whatever reason.
Yeah, I mean, it means
king. I think it means the king or something like that. Yeah,
the way he spells it is not correct, but yeah, Ray means king and Reina means queen.
Yeah.
Fun fact.
Is that right? Okay. Rose McGowan has germophobia, and so she had to have her stripper pole sanitized before she would do her dance routine.
Wait, what? What? So, like, was it her vagina the only one rubbing on that?
She had to make sure that it had been the only one rubbing on that, so she had to have it sanitized. Ray's name is revealed to be El Rey, likely a reference to surf guitar legend Link Ray, whose songs were featured in Quentin Tarantino's Pulp Fiction and Robert Rodriguez's Desperado. Link's Ray's first name is also Frederick, which is funny because, you know, Freddie plays him. So in Mexico, the film was exhibited in its original unrated version in theaters. The original title for Planet Terror was Project Terror. As for the reference to Planet Terror, Rodriguez paid homage to the late night horror show Project Terror, which airs in Rodriguez's hometown of San Antonio, Texas, on KENS TV during the 70s and early 80s.
Wow, okay.
Rose McGowan originally suggested her friend Ray Philip Santos for the role of El Rey, but it went to Freddie Rodriguez instead.
I mean, it legitimately would have been an El Rey.
Yeah, it would have been. The scene where Ray and Cherry burst out on the motorcycle, Cherry fires the gun, was filmed first with a chopper on a spinning platform and then redone with CGI enhancements. So they just had the bike spinning around on like a platform.
And I know this film is like 5 years later, I think, from Resident Evil, but the CGI in this one, way better.
So much better.
Yeah.
Speaking of, Lindsay Lohan was originally rumored to be up for the role of Cherry Darling in this movie. But she would eventually appear in the actual film version of Machete in 2010, which was an extended feature film of the fake trailer scene in this movie.
I think I speak for everyone when I say we could absolutely see Lindsay Lohan playing Cherry Darling. We could. I mean, like, because she's normally the nice girl, but, like, it would just, it's one of those things where you don't expect to see, and that's what Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez like to do. They like to give you the unexpected.
Yeah, I'm just glad that they gave, because I feel like this was, for Rose, like, yes, the best that she ever looked. I mean, she was pretty on Charmed, but, I mean, like, this was next level for her.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez in an interview have stated that Nightmare City from 1980, aka also known as City of the Walking Dead, was an inspiration for Planet Terror.
Okay.
I think it's basically a movie where the zombies are all smart and they go around killing people with guns and other weapons and stuff. So it's kind of like, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Robert Rodriguez found the scene where Dakota Block leaves her son in the car, too chilling to film. And he didn't want anybody else's children to play. So he got his son, Tony, to be the one that actually shoots himself in the head in that scene.
Okay. Interesting choice.
To avoid traumatizing his son, Rebel Rodriguez, the one who played Tony.
Rebel Rodriguez.
Yeah. And it's funny because I think Robert Rodriguez is like one of his studio names is Rebel Rousers or something like that. Yeah. So I wonder if it's named after his children. But anyways, to avoid traumatizing young Rebel, with the knowledge of his disturbing death scene, Rodriguez shot several scenes with Tony surviving all the way to the end of the movie. and some of these can be seen on the DVD, but apparently only the complete edit with this footage is available in the private copies of the Rodriguez family home. So his son survived to the end in the family appropriate version.
Oh, okay. Don't want to watch that one. Sorry.
What did you think that they had the balls to have the kid blow his own brains out? Like, I thought that's pretty ballsy for this type of movie. I mean, given everything that was going on otherwise.
I mean, it's one of those things. It's a total shocker. So it's one of those things. It's going to be one of those memorable parts of the film. Like, it is ballsy.
I mean, it stood out a lot because I was like, oh, shit, this kid kills himself. I remember this scene now. And I was like, that's crazy that they had that in this movie.
Yeah.
When asked about the ending, Rodriguez said, I consider it an anti-Army of Darkness-like ending. In Army of Darkness, Ash returns to normal suburbia after battling the undead. In my film, the characters are taken out of suburbia and now battle the undead in a more barren landscape.
Yeah.
Pretty smart. I mean, he's just kind of flipping it around. The total body count of Planet Terror is 281 people. El Rey kills 52 of them. Cherry kills 50, and Sheriff Haig has 13 of those kills.
You know, this reminds me of, for some reason, what Noah and I like to play this zombie game. I forget what it is. It's a really popular one at like arcades, and you're sitting into this huge pod and you both have machine guns, and I always have a huge kill count in comparison to him, and sometimes it's only a few more than he does, but your girl be killing it literally.
That's good. You're kind of getting that aggression out, so whenever that really happens, you'll be ready to
I'm not fucking around. Fuck them zombies.
When Tammy is changing her car station radio, that's when they talk about the departed Jungle Julia. So that's the link to Death Proof.
Yeah.
In the scene at the beginning of the movie in the strip club, Cherry is zipping up the boot of her right leg when she says, I need a dramatic change in my life. That leg is the same one that gets amputated later. So,
oh my God.
Gotta watch what you ask for, folks. Planet Terror is the second film in which both Freddie Rodriguez and Stacey Ferguson, a.k.a. Fergie, appear, but not in the same scene together. The first film was Wolfgang Peterson's Poseidon from 2006. Just as in Poseidon, both of the characters died violently in both movies. So there you go.
Spoiler alert. Fuck.
At approximately 1 hour, 7 minutes and 10 second mark, Ray, for Freddie Rodriguez, says that's an order to Michael Biehn's character, Sheriff Haig. It is very reminiscent of a similar line. That's an order, soldier, said by Biehn as his character, Reese, to Linda Hamilton in Terminator.
Oh, yeah. Holy crap.
And one that she says to her son, John Connor, in the second movie, Terminator 2, which is the best one in that series, but I digress. We'll get to that eventually in sci-fi horror. So, this movie to me, I'll let you go first. I went first on the last one. Go ahead and tell me what you think of this movie.
This one's a good one. I have always, since day one, enjoyed this one.
100%, yeah.
And it's so perfectly imperfect. It's definitely got horror in it. It's got comedy, and we love a horror comedy. It's got gore. It's got violence. Shit's exploding. There's a fucking machine gun leg on a hot babe. And some of the...
There's penises falling off bodies. There's, I mean...
Great actors.
Oozing pustules that just spurt out, like, you know, blood everywhere and pus and...
God, I am between a 4.8 and a 5. I'm veering more towards a 4.8, but I can't justify why it's not a 5.0. So I'm going to stick with a 4.8 for now. Let me hear what you have to say, because I might change my mind. I might not.
So originally I thought 4.5 because it's at least that high. Mm-hmm. And then you just said that, so I'm thinking at least a 4.6 is what I should go with. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why it's not a 5 either, but it's at least a 4.6. Okay. So, I mean, it's because I can watch this movie all the fucking time, and I enjoy it every single time I watch it.
Yes. I'm going to leave it at that then. I'm going to leave it at those scores. I just wrote them down because if – you weren't at a 5 and able to justify to me why it should be a 5. I don't know why it's not, but I'm content with a 4.8. That's pretty fucking high.
I mean, I don't know why I wouldn't give it a five either. The only thing I can think of is that there's a part of me that feels like where it's only half of a movie.
Yeah.
That's hurting it because there's Death Proof on the other side of it. And Death Proof doesn't bring it up for me is the sad part.
No, it doesn't. I love Death Proof though.
The first half of Death Proof brings it up, but not all of Death Proof. Overall, Death Proof actually brings it down a little bit. So,
yeah.
But on its own, it is, I mean, it's in the 4.5 and plus range. I mean, I could probably change my opinion on it any day of the week, but it never goes below a 4.5.
Yeah, definitely. To me, it would never be that low. I wonder if that, because it's not a five, it's just a little excessive in the schlockiness. I know it's supposed to be.
But I love that about it. That's the thing. That's what sells it to me every time I watch it, because every character they introduce in the movie, I like seeing for a different reason. Like,
understandably. I think for me, though, I don't veer towards those films. So,
here's one thing why I say it's not a five. I get a little tired of the movie when they go to the military base at the end of it. That's why it's not a five for me, because Bruce Willis is playing it a little too staid, a little too, you know, by the book.
Yeah.
He's not getting into it like the rest of them.
Correct.
And between him and just the fact that it's a bunch of scenes where they're locked up in like a jail cell and they're kind of having like interpersonal moments, it takes a little bit away from the rest of the movie.
Okay.
That part.
Yes. And I definitely agree with that, because that was not my favorite, I would say. I think I like the, because they escape. Yeah.
They escape, yes. And then you see that scene where one of the babysitter twins is sitting in the front seat with Chip, and they're in the helicopter, and they mow them down. That brings it back up. Like, yes. It starts to dip, and then it rises right back up again.
Once they escape, that's, yes, it takes off from there again. So, thankfully, it's just a small, but they really didn't need it, because at an hour and 46 minutes, that was a long-ass fucking movie, especially for a grindhouse double feature.
I mean, I like the scene where, you know, Quentin Tarantino loses his damn nuts and ball or penis or whatever, because he's being creepy in that fucking scene. Yes. And you want it to happen.
He deserves it.
But at the same time, it goes on a little too long. It just does at that point. I mean,
yeah, some things do kind of, you're just like, okay, that's enough. That's enough slices.
So I think that's what it is. I think when they get to that military base, I'm just kind of like, dips a little bit for me. And I'm like, all right, he's going to ride that high. If they would have like somehow just had the explosions in the military base, had a bunch of shootout scenes, Cherry Darling with that big machine gun, just, you know, blasting everybody. And then the helicopter scene, it would have been a five. There was no way it wouldn't have been if it wasn't for that interlude there right before the end.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm content with what we've scored it.
Yeah, so we'll see what people think. I think next time we've got Land of the Dead and Train to Busan.
Oh, yeah. And that is a wrap for the Zed or Dead season. I have survived.
Right. You have survived. Now I've got to survive when bad animals go bad. Cody said that he would see us the season after that. He's peacing out for the animals because he doesn't like animal horror movies, apparently. So
Cody, you can't do that to us.
That's what he said. He said, I'll catch you back in 2026 when you go to the next one. I'm like, all right.
Hella rude. You're not a real one.
The thing I don't get about that is, like, I'm not the biggest fan of most of those movies either, but there are some bangers in that. I mean, there's, you know, obviously Cujo.
Yeah.
Jaws. I mean, that's one of the best horror movies ever. There's some good movies in that mix. It's just it's the bad ones in between. It's going to be the rough ones to get through. You know?
Understandable, but we have been through some fucking janky ass zombie movies.
That's true. We
went through some janky ass ghost movies during ghost season. Like, there's always going to be a janky ass film for us to review.
Yeah, but I feel like there's more highlights in these seasons. Like, I feel like we're really going to have to pace ourselves, because we're going to have like a really good, a banger, and then like maybe two or three bad ones and another banger. We can't have like, you know, 2 months worth of like, okay, this is generic Italian, you know, when animals attack movie, take 47.
No.
You know, we'll be dead in the water in that case.
Oh,
so we've got to, So we're going to have to like just throw we're going to have to look through a list of the ones out there. But like Lake Placid, that's a really good one. We can throw that out there. Deep Blue Sea.
Oh, yeah.
LL Cool J survives that one,
I think. Yeah, he does. So. And then I was telling fans, too, like if you have any recommendations or if you have one that you want us to review, now is the time to get it in because we are starting to make our list or, you know, we're checking it twice. I'm just kidding. It's kind of hard to catch us in the middle of a season and be like, oh, hey, you should review this. And especially, again, please don't review or don't give us something that, like, maybe doesn't belong to that season. I know we'll make an exception here or there. It's going to be rare, though. But, like, we're trying to stick to the season. We've been having people like, oh, you need to review this. And it's like, sorry, man. We're trying to stick to the seasons.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's enough out there that you can cover this stuff for a long time. It's there's some movie out there, and I don't remember, like, Man's Best Friend, I think, is the name of it, where there's like evil dogs that have, like, chips in their heads or something like that. No, there's something weird about the dogs. Man's Best
Friend was a Rottweiler, and it was just one bad dog, but I forgot what was wrong with it.
But there's another movie then entirely besides that where they genetically modify or do something to these dogs for a military experiment and they start attacking people. Yeah. So there's a lot of movies like that and bad animals go bad.
Yeah, I think you're right, though, because they are saying that a reporter was trying to get a story on a facility where there's cruel experiments being conducted on the dogs. And a dog follows her.
Wait a minute, is that movie Congo part of When Bad Animals Go Bad? Isn't that about like the...
Yeah, the Congo needs to be in When Bad Animals Go Bad.
And Anaconda is going to be fun just because it's so awful. And then we can obviously reference the Sir Mix-a-Lot song that entire episode.
Shut up. So dumb.
That's going to be that season, so tune in.
Hey!
But we do have two pretty fucking Train to Busan. I'm just going to throw it out there that it's a five.
I haven't seen it.
Before we get to the episode,
I haven't even seen it.
It's a fucking five. I don't care. I mean, I'm not going to reveal what I think about Land of the Dead, but we'll get to it. But
yeah, I think that both you and Noah have said that Train to Busan gets very emotional. So.
At the end, it is very emotional. Yes. So,
anyhow.
All right, folks. With that, peace be with you.
And with your spirit.